Then, a groundbreaking healthcare model has successfully reduced suicide rates by 25%, saving lives and changing mental health care.
We estimate that about 5% of the entire U.S. adult general population has suicide thoughts at any given time during a year.
Stay with us. Those two stories and more are coming your way on this week's show. InfoTrack begins right after this.
Huge news. Right now at Wendy's, you can get a Son of Baconator for just $3. I don't think you understand this situation. The Son of Baconator is only $3 for a limited time. You know, smoked bacon, rich melted cheese. That Son of Baconator is only $3. Thank you to whoever wished upon that star. For bacon that just won't quit, gotta be Wendy's.
U.S. price and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Alaska and Hawaii, not valid on a combo or in third-party delivery platforms.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
When you switch to Progressive and bundle your home and auto, you could save hundreds, and that's a surprising amount of money.
Whoa, that's like farmer's market money.
That's like, give me a gallon of that locally sourced raw honey money.
That's certified organic heirloom tomatoes in every imaginable color except red money.
That's, let's get 2 pounds of pink oyster mushrooms money. I'm not even sure I like pink oyster mushrooms.
Guess it's time to find out, because you could save hundreds when you switch to Progressive and bundle. Then the world is your pink oyster mushroom. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
U.S. electricity demand is expected to grow in the next decade and double by 2050. Earlier this year, more than 80 U.S. energy experts discussed how to avoid the grid being overwhelmed. And the meeting generated six big ideas. And here to share those big ideas is Arun Majumdar, Dean of the Stanford Dorr School of Sustainability. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So let's run through these six big ideas. Number one is ensure American security. Could you just talk about that a little bit?
Sure. When we think about energy, we have to balance based on three securities. One is our economic security. Electricity is used widely in our economy. Imagine if the electricity is turned off, that's going to really affect our economy in a very bad way. So it's economic security. It is our national security. For example, right now there's a huge emphasis on AI, and the access to electricity for AI technologies is going to be very important. And if the electricity is not here, some of the AI companies may go overseas, and frankly, that's a national security issue. And finally, it's the environment. You know, we don't want electricity to pollute the environment. In fact, we want a clean environment so that people can breathe fresh air and not be polluted. So it affects all of them. So on the national security front, it really affects our military. A lot of it is based on electricity, our intelligence, law enforcement. They require electricity. And so having access to reliable and affordable electricity and resilient to some of the shocks that we see to the electricity system is super important.
Well, moving along, the second big idea is a true all-of-the-above energy strategy. What is that all about?
We need to have diverse sources of electricity because that diversity of sources of electricity, so that we don't put all the buckets in one basket, is part of the security. And so, fortunately for the United States, we are blessed with some resources, whether it's natural gas, renewable resources, whether it's sunlight or wind in certain places, and nuclear and geothermal. By the way, this is one of the things that is being developed right now, some cutting-edge technology, frankly, coming out of Stanford, that is developing geothermal. And nuclear, frankly, we need to grow a nuclear fleet. Nuclear power is clean and it's baseload. So if you think about all of these options, it's very important to have this diversity of sources. And that's the all of the above strategy.
We're talking with Arun Majumdar, Dean of the Stanford Dorr School of Sustainability. And we're talking about six big ideas to help America handle the energy demands of the future. And we're up to number three of the six, and that is create a federal and state grid investment fund.
Yeah, so the way the electricity system is structured in the United States, there are regional centers that balance the grid. The supply and the demand of the electricity has to be balanced in real time. And we are a regional grid, but we don't have enough interconnection and connective lines, the transmission lines across the country, enough of them. As you know, solar resources are largely in the Southwest and other parts of the West, whereas many of the loads are in the East. There are wind resources in the middle, somewhere in the Midwest. And so if we could have enough infrastructure, transmission lines, to move the electricity so that you can really utilize these diverse sources of energy, I think that'd be more secure. And one of the challenges is the financing of this and the cost. And so we think that it would be prudent for a federal and state partnership in such a way that these intermittency of solar and wind, for example, can be balanced by natural gas in different parts of the country. And so that's what we are recommending, is a way to facilitate a national transmission system that'll actually make it more affordable, to reduce the cost and make it more affordable to the people.
Sure, it makes perfect sense. We're now up to number four on the list of six big ideas, and this is streamline permitting.
One of the biggest challenges in the United States right now is the permitting process that is required to build this infrastructure, whether it's new transmission lines, electricity generation, energy storage projects, etc. It takes a long time because of various reviews and the bureaucratic process, and it is sometimes the alignment of local community with state mandates or state directions and the federal government. And it's to the point that it's very difficult to build anything. And the United States is known for building infrastructure. That's what we have done in the past. We need to streamline this permitting process so they can actually build in America. And that's jobs for people right here in the United States. So I think this is something, I think it's a win-win if you can get this right.
Well, we're up to number five on the list of six big items. This one is make grid policies more flexible. What is that one all about?
The grid is about 100 to 120 years old. And it started off with, going back to the United States, the whole grid design that we have around the world actually started originally with the architecture of Nikola Tesla and Thomas Edison. They are the people who actually got it started, along with GE and Westinghouse. And that architecture is the paradigm, is a centralized generation, like big turbo machinery. Then the electricity goes to transmission lines. Then it goes to distribution network. And then it comes from our distribution network to our homes and offices, etc. That paradigm is shifting right now. We are finding the cost of storage to come down very significantly. We are finding the cost of rooftop solar to come down. And there's a lot of other generators and big loads that are coming on the edge of the grid, not in the generation, but the edge of the grid. And the grid was never designed for these kinds of big loads, air conditioning loads for large buildings. And electricity generation on the edge of the grid where the people are and trying to push the electricity back the other way, this is new. And I think the policies that have been created in the past was really designed for that 20th century paradigm. And now in the 21st century, we see that these grids are changing. And for resilience purposes, sometimes we need microgrids. We need that connected grid to be isolated once in a while, because otherwise the whole grid may fall apart. And we saw elements of that going on in Southern California when there's all these wildfires. And then once everything is connected, it's very hard to disconnect and create a microgrid so that it provides electricity for a local region. So the grid policies have to allow for these changes to happen, for new technologies to be brought in to make it more affordable and resilient and reliable for the people.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And our number six on the list is modernize utility operations and business models. And I think we've kind of touched on that, but there must be some more depth to it, I guess, right?
Yeah, so in many parts of the country, we are seeing these extreme weather events, whether it's tornadoes or floods or heat waves. And the 20th century grid was really not designed for those kinds of extreme events. And so that's why we find, in many cases, power outages, and then the duration and the frequency of power outages is increasing now. I mean, that's what the data is suggesting. So it's very important that we modernize the utility operations, because right now we are often unaware that some things are going on. And that requires not only some new technology to be added to make it more affordable and resilient, but frankly, this requires some money. And so the business models of the utilities and other independent power providers, et cetera, they need to be addressed as well. And that's part of the policymaking on the legislation side, whether it's state or federal, et cetera. So I think that's what this big idea is calling for, is that maybe we should now, given all the risks that we are facing from weather events or cybersecurity, that we are also being hacked as well from outside entities. And given all of the risks that we're facing right now, it's worth looking at the operations and business models and probably do a reset and refresh it.
Arun Majumdar, Dean of the Stanford Dorr School of Sustainability, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Next, strategies for suicide prevention. That story as InfoTrack continues.
Don't go away. InfoTrack will be back right after this.
Huge news. Right now at Wendy's, you can get a Son of Baconator for just $3. I don't think you understand this situation. The Son of Baconator is only $3 for a limited time. You know, smoked bacon, rich melted cheese. That Son of Baconator is only $3. Thank you to whoever wished upon that star. For bacon that just won't quit, gotta be Wendy's.
U.S. price and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Alaska and Hawaii, not valid on a combo or in third-party delivery platforms.
Not another one.
26-year-old male, wasn't wearing a seatbelt.
How's the driver in the other vehicle?
Yeah, thankfully she's okay. She had her seatbelt on.
It's really sad. You know, these tragedies are entirely preventable.
It's said, click it or ticket. But for some, they should be so lucky. Besides getting a ticket or a fine, the consequences could take your life. So don't risk it. Click it or ticket. This message is brought to you by NHTSA.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Progressive knows if you have to choose between everyday life and your RV, RV wins.
What, are you going to take the RV to the lake or clean out your closet?
RV wins!
Putting the dishes away or taking the RV camping?
RV wins!
Cleaning the fridge or taking a trip to the beach?
RV wins!
You might want to clean the fridge real quick because, you know, mold.
We clean out the fridge, then take the RV out.
With Progressive, you can bundle your RV with your home or auto and save with a discount and spend more time enjoying those savings in your RV. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Not available in all states and situations.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Nearly 50,000 lives in the U.S. are lost each year to suicide, and millions more consider it. But a new approach to clinical care is able to reduce suicide rates by a significant degree. InfoTrack's Roy Mackey has the story. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. Brian Amidani, PhD, is lead author of this study and director of research for behavioral health sciences at Henry Ford Health, a nonprofit healthcare system based in Detroit. Dr. Amidani, you were examining ways to reduce suicide rates. Before we get to your findings, can you just maybe give us some stats on how big the issue of suicide is today?
Suicide's a pretty major public health concern in the U.S. Almost 50,000 people are dying by suicide in the United States. We estimate that nearly 2 million people a year are attempting suicide, and well over 10 million people a year are thinking about suicide. So if you think about that more broadly, we estimate that about 5% of the entire U.S. adult general population has suicide thoughts at any given time during a year.
Now, your study shows a 25% reduction in suicide rates using something called the zero suicide model. Can you briefly explain what the zero suicide model is and what makes it so effective?
Yeah, the zero suicide model is an approach to clinical care pathway for suicide prevention that we pioneered at Henry Ford Health back in 2001. The basic concept is that we have identification of people who are at risk. So we're doing suicide risk screening, suicide risk assessment, identification using other means, and then linkage to other kinds of treatments. And first of all, we use a series of brief interventions and connection to family members and support services, and then also connection to more intensive suicide prevention specific treatment. The key here is that all of these interventions and strategies are focused directly on suicide prevention, whereas in the past, most ways that people have done suicide prevention has been using standard strategies for depression or anxiety or substance use disorders, but they haven't specifically focused on suicide prevention. What makes us different is that we do that, and that we embed that within a real healthcare system and design processes around suicide prevention that are built into the infrastructure of a big system.
How long-term are the results of this when someone's suicide is prevented?
We have been doing this work since 2001, and our original metric was to evaluate whether anybody made a suicide attempt or death within a year after a healthcare visit. So that's how we've traditionally measured it at Henry Ford. It's measured in a lot of different ways. In this study, we're looking more near term about suicide attempts within 90 days after a healthcare visit.
Our guest on InfoTrack is Brian Amidani, Director of Research for Behavioral Health Services at Henry Ford Health, based in Detroit. And we're talking about his study of the zero suicide model, a model for suicide prevention. Doctor, your study mentions that nearly everyone who dies by suicide visits a doctor within a year prior to their death. Why do you think these opportunities for intervention are often missed, and what role do you see primary care providers playing in suicide prevention?
Suicide prevention is missed for a variety of reasons. So yes, that's absolutely right. Most people have a healthcare visit. Over 83% of people have a healthcare visit a year before they die by suicide. And over 92% of people in the year before they make a suicide attempt. So we have opportunities. And actually, most of those visits are happening right in the few weeks before somebody makes an attempt or dies. So we have an opportunity to do something about it. Traditionally, suicide prevention was always viewed as something that was not the responsibility of a healthcare system. And that really has only been the case for the last 10 years or so. Now, the reason that it hasn't been implemented, there's several of them. One of them is that if you just start screening, then nobody really knows what they're supposed to do if somebody screens positive. So you have to have a structure in place in order to support screening for suicide prevention, in the same way as if somebody had a high cholesterol score, you need to have a pathway or some strategy for what to do to prevent a heart attack. And the other thing is that that causes concern. So if there wasn't a strategy in place, then providers are nervous about doing it because they need a solution for what to do if somebody screens positive. You can't just do a bunch of screening. You know, the next thing is that most people have never really been trained in any of their education or training to actually ask people about suicide risk. That isn't included in most medical schools. It's not included in social work programs or psychology programs. So they don't really know how to do it. And for the first time, we're really thinking about training people. We're teaching them how to do it, providing specific protocols for what they can do when somebody screens positive, and that there are solutions available and evidence-based strategies that help reduce the risk
once somebody screens positive.
You mentioned screening a lot. Can you explain how that screening process in the Zero Suicide Project differs from what traditional screening might be?
Most people screen for depression in healthcare systems. There are a lot of tools available, but most commonly people use the patient health questionnaire. It's a 9-item screener. The first 8 of those questions are about depression. And when people respond positively to depression, then they are plugged into a series of pathways to respond for depression care. But the 9th question is actually about suicide risk. It's about suicidal ideation. And so when somebody screens positive on that question, it's a suicide question. But what has happened in the past is that most people are just using the first 2 questions. And then if they're positive, then they ask other questions. So most of the response has really been about depression. What we're advocating for is to cast a broader net and really have a protocol in place to respond to the answer about suicide prevention. There's no doubt that we need to continue to work harder, but this is a first strategy for us to reach people in healthcare systems across an entire health system, in primary care where most people go in the weeks and months leading up to their death, and in behavioral health where most people are at risk, and in other settings where people are going to receive care but who are also at risk. We also want to encourage people, if they're listening, that if they're having thoughts of suicide, there is a national crisis line 988, which can be called at any time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to reach a crisis counselor in their local area who can help them through any kind of difficult situation. And so we want to support people who are at risk and know that we're thinking about them and that we're working hard every day to come up with even more solutions to try and prevent suicide across our country, and that we won't stop until we know that everyone is prevented from suicide.
Brian Amidani, PhD, Director of Research for Behavioral Health Services at Henry Ford Health in Detroit. Doctor, thanks for sharing your research with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
These are all the things you would hear upon getting into and starting your car. Going wherever the road takes you. It's just, there was one sound noticeably missing.
Oh, man.
Remember, click it or ticket. You don't want to fine, and it just might save your life. So don't risk it. Click it or ticket. This message is brought to you by NHTSA.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
My car is making this noise. Sometimes it's like, and sometimes it's like,
do you have a dash light on?
Oh, yeah.
Then we don't have to listen for clues. With the free Fix Finder service, we can read a check engine, ABS, or maintenance light to find the likely fix and even recommend a local shop if you need one.
So you don't need to hear the,
not with Fix Finder. Everything you need, nothing you don't.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
It's that time of year for pools and boating. But do parents know the best way to keep their children safe? InfoTrack's Jim Anthony is here with an Olympic champion who's turning his family's personal tragedy into a life-saving mission. Jim?
Thanks, Chris. Joining us today is a master of the alpine ski slopes, an Olympic and World Championship gold medalist, and 2-time World Cup champion. Bodie Miller is our guest. Bodie, welcome to InfoTrack.
Thank you for having me.
While we could talk for hours about skiing, today we're going to focus on the importance of water safety, something Bodie is extremely passionate about. Bodie and his wife, professional beach volleyball player Morgan Beck, have a very personal connection to this topic. In 2018, their 19-month-old daughter accidentally drowned in a neighbor's pool. Bodie, you've been open about the tragic loss of your daughter. Please share for us what motivated you and Morgan to turn that grief into a mission for water safety awareness and advocacy.
Yeah, thank you. You know, after losing our daughter, I think we became aware of how little we'd known. We were obviously aware of the dangers of water, and we had a pool fence, but we just hadn't really been exposed to the right information. The conversations hadn't been had, and I think that was really frustrating for us with our pediatrician, with our community, you know, neighbors, friends. we felt like without any malicious intent, it just had been skipped over. And, you know, given that it's the number one cause of unintentional death for young people, we really felt like it should be the number one thing that people are aware of or think about. And the information needed to be presented to people in a clear way that allowed them to act on it and sort of mitigate some of the risk that water represents.
It's important that children learn how to swim, or at least know the basics and the fundamentals of swimming from a very young age.
Yeah, and I think that was a part of it. Our kids had had floaties and things like that. And after losing our daughter, we looked into it more. And that is something that we wholeheartedly are against at this point. All it does is makes a kid believe, you know, when they're at that age, they can't really recognize that the floatie is what's making them float. They just think, oh, I just hop in the pool. I can jump in anytime, anywhere, and I float. And that's fine if you put it on them. But if it happens where they have an opportunity to jump in, they don't recognize, oh, I don't have my floaties on. I'm not going to float. And those types of things, I think, are really important as well. Obviously, survival swim for very young infants and then learning proficient swimming as they get older. But it's still the number two cause, or three, I think, for unintentional death up to 18 years old. So swimming proficiency doesn't entirely prevent it. So there's kind of layers that need to be taken into consideration.
I have family members who grew up along the shores of Lake Michigan, and one thing they were taught from a very young age is to respect the water, whether by a pool, on the beach, in the ocean, wherever you are, respecting the water is key. Do you agree?
I agree 100%. And I think it's something that, again, after losing a child, people sort of take the conversation differently with us. We're trying to bridge that. So the conversation is had in a very sort of serious, intentional way with people who haven't lost a child, you know, a family member or somebody to drowning. You know, we talk about on boats is like kids don't want to wear their life jacket. And they're like, well, you know, you're here and I can swim and blah, blah. And the idea is that accidents happen, right? Like if you fall and hit your head or you fall in the water the wrong way, you want to have that on. And that's just a respect for the environment that you're in. And I think you're exactly right. Teaching that from a young age of enjoy it, but definitely respect what it is and the risk involved as well.
So you've emphasized that swimming lessons and layers of protection like the automatic safety covers can be life-saving. Walk us through how those layers work together to protect families.
Well, I mean, in the patterning of how you operate around water in general, that informs your kids, gives them a little bit different mindset around it, but not just the kids, parents. And a lot of times you're around a pool and it's easy to get distracted. And just having the awareness of the risk and the danger allows you to kind of prioritize having one person always kind of really paying attention. And if you need to go do something, you don't just walk away. You say, hey, can you really pay attention just for a couple minutes? And having that be understood the way that it's meant to be understood, right? Which is not just very casual. It's sort of a life or death type obligation. And then some sort of basic stuff that became obvious to me afterwards, but that I didn't think of before, which is if a kid's missing or you don't spot a kid around or things get real quiet, that the first place you need to look is in water sources, and then go look in the bathroom or a bedroom or somewhere else. It's that priority scale that can save the time and make all the difference. So, you know, for parents who it happens all the time where your kid's missing, and very often they're in the other room, but that's not the first place to look. The first place to look is a water source, and then go look in the other room.
Bodie Miller is our guest. Bodie, thank you for sharing your advocacy for water safety with us, and we wish you continued success.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm Jim Anthony for InfoTrack.
That wraps up this episode of InfoTrack. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us next time for another InfoTrack broadcast.
Hotter than a hoochie-coochie. We laid rubber on the Georgia asphalt. We got a little crazy, but we never got caught. Down by the river on a Friday night, pyramid of cans in the pale moonlight. Talking about cars and dreaming about women. Never had a plan, just a living for the minute. Yeah, way down yonder on the Chattahoochee. Never knew how much that muddy water meant to me. But I learned how to swim and I learned who I was. A lot about living and a little about love. Aww. we fogged up the windows in my old Chevy. I was willing, but she wasn't ready. So I settled for a burger and a grape snow cone. I dropped her off early, but I didn't go home. Down by the river on a Friday night, a pyramid of cans in the pale moonlight. Talking about cars and dreaming about women. Never had a plan, just a living for the minute. Yeah, went down yonder on the Chattahoochee. You never knew how much that muddy water meant to me. But I learned how to swim and I learned who I was. A lot about living and a little about love. Yeah, went down yonder on the Chattahoochee. You never knew how much that muddy water meant to me. But I learned how to swim and I learned who I was. A lot about living and a little about love. A lot about living and a little about love.
Tell your smart speaker to play St. Croix Country.
She rolled in my little sandy town. She spent the summer there, a couple houses down. Well, it was magic in the air when she caught my eye. We shared three short months and one long goodbye. She was the one that got away, the one that wrecked my heart. I should have never let her. She was the one that got away. Yeah, the one that got away. Well, she kissed my lips down on Ocean Drive. She set my world on fire on the 4th of July. Spent the summer there, a couple houses down.
Well, I was only scared of the devil and her dad. So we parked somewhere we knew they'd never look. No, I'd never seen nothing like her, playing with the flame of her mama's lighter. No, it wasn't very long before I was hooked. Heaven was a preacher's spot in that first church parking lot. Her hanging on to me like a cross on a refuse does. Her eyes were blue, the words were red on that half-pack of cigarettes. At 17, that's what hallelujah was. Life wasn't heavy in the back of that Chevy, me, her, and the Holy Ghost. Something about us, hell of a rush, falling in love, lighting up them holy smokes. They'd run us off, but we come running back. And we pick up where we left off the night before. Said, how pissed off would your mama be if we walked in there and you married me? Even if we never made it through them old doors. Heaven was a preacher's spot in that first church parking lot. Her hanging on to me like a cross on a refuse does. Her eyes were blue, the words were red on that half-pack of cigarettes. At 17, that's what hallelujah was. Life wasn't heavy in the back of that Chevy, me, her, and the Holy Ghost. Something about us, hell of a rush, falling in love, lighting up them holy smoke. Nothing about those nights felt like sinning. Jesus forgives, but I can't forget when. Spot in that first church parking lot, her hanging on to me like a cross on a refuse does. Her eyes were blue, the words were red on that half-pack of cigarettes. At 17, that's what hallelujah was. Life wasn't heavy in the back of that Chevy, me, her, and the Holy Ghost. Something about us, hell of a rush, falling in love, lighting up them holy smoke.
Twin Cities to Menominee, you're in 95.7 St. Croix Country.
For WSCM News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services has started a statewide campaign meant to highlight the work of local aging and disability resource centers. The agency is hoping to increase awareness of and improve access to the centers with online resources and a toll-free phone service aimed at connecting residents with their local center. The Aging and Disability Resource Centers provide critical support for older and disabled residents, including health and social services, financial assistance programs, transportation services, and meal programs. Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Hannah Dugan has entered a not guilty plea as she faces federal charges of obstruction and concealing an individual to prevent arrest. Judge Dugan was arrested last month after being accused of helping an undocumented immigrant evade arrest by federal authorities in her courtroom. She's facing up to 6 years in prison on the charges. Her attorneys filed a motion to dismiss the case on Wednesday, arguing that she was acting in her official capacity as a judge and is therefore immune to prosecution. The City of River Falls is now accepting bids for renovation work at the public library. The renovations would include new technology and improved digital access, as well as the introduction of an interactive children's area, a dedicated teen space, outdoor programming space, and a telehealth room. The public fundraising phase of the library's Renew and Inspire capital campaign began last week with the goal of raising $7.5 million. More information and the needed documentation can be found online, and bids will be accepted until May 27th. A Clayton man has been charged in Barron County Circuit Court after allegedly leading authorities on a high-speed chase in October that ended in a crash. According to court documents, 29-year-old Jonathan Bowerfield was officially charged with 5 felonies on Tuesday, including attempting to flee an officer, possession of methamphetamine, and possession with intent to deliver psilocybin. Authorities say the chase reached speeds of around 100 miles per hour and ended when the vehicle crashed in a ditch and Bowerfield escaped on foot in the woods. For WSCM News, I'm James Kelly.
St. Croix Country Weather.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Any leftover cloud cover giving way to mostly sunny skies. A north breeze will be light and highs in the lower 60s. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, northeast winds, morning lows in the upper 30s, close to 40. A few showers Monday, highs in the upper 50s. It's 39 at our studios.
95.7 FM.
Solve a problem. Hell, it's almost dawn. Ain't no time for sleeping if our love is wearing thin. 'Cause I ain't giving up. You ain't giving in. No matter, love starts slipping. Love starts.
Sun beating down, forecast calling for some more of the same. Well, I can't fix that, but I can fix a drink. I
turn on Fox News and then CNN, but it's the same dang thing all over again. The world's in the toilet and the market's in the tank. Well, I can't fix that. No, but I can fix a drink, pour it on ice, mix it on up and get you feeling right. I can get you buzzed, I can get you smiling, I can make you feel like you're sitting on an island. I can make it fruity, or I can make it strong. All you gotta do is tell me what you want. Put it to your lips, take a little sip, and tell me what you think. Yeah, I can fix a drink. You say you got a broken phone and a broken heart. The boss is on your back and your truck won't start. None of your friends wanna listen to Hank. Well, I can't fix that. No, but I can fix a drink, pour it on ice, mix it on up and get you feeling right. I can get you buzzed, I can get you smiling, I can make you feel like you're sitting on an island. I can make it fruity, or I can make it strong. All you gotta do is tell me what you want. Put it to your lips, take a little sip, tell me what you think. Yeah, I can fix a drink. Going on with you, but if you got some cheap whiskey and some Mountain Dew, Malibu, Cuervo, Coke in a cup, brother, I can hook you up. I can fix a drink, pour it on ice, mix it on up and get you feeling right. I can get you buzzed, I can get you smiling, I can make you feel like you're sitting on an island. I can make it fruity, or I can make it strong. All you gotta do is tell me what you want. Put it to your lips, take a little sip, and tell me what you think.
Damn, that's good.
Yeah, I can fix a drink. Yeah, I can fix a
place left to fall, begging for another chance, if there's any chance at all, that you might still be listening, loving and forgiving guys like me. I've spent my whole life getting it all. Sure could use your help, 'cause from now on I wanna be a good man, I do like I shouldn't, man. I wanna be the kind of man the mirror likes to see. I wanna be a strong man and admit that I was wrong, man. God, I'm asking you to come change to the man I wanna be. If there's any way for her and me to make another start, could you see what you could do to put some love back in her heart? 'Cause it's gonna take a miracle after all I've done to really make her that I wanna be a stay man, I wanna be a brave man, I wanna be the kind of man she sees in her dreams. God, I wanna be your man, and I wanna be her man. God, I only hope she still believes in the man I wanna be. Talk is cheap,
Lord, don't give up on me. I want to be a giving man. I want to really start living. God, I'm asking you to come change me. Into the man I want to be.
Just tell your friends you want to hear St. Croix Country.
Wasted a paycheck on whiskey and long necks ever since you left, trying to figure this out. This jack I've been drinking's been wasted on thinking. Now I got a new reason for throwing them down.
Oh, listen to me. What I mean is, can I buy you a makes two of us glad you came. No, I don't know the name of the band, but they're good, aren't they? Would you like to dance? Yeah, I like the song too. It reminds me of you and me, baby. Do you think there's a chance that later on I could drive you home? No, I don't mind that. Chair after all. Oh, I like you too, and to tell you the truth, that wasn't my chair after all.
Live from Northwest Wisconsin and on the free Civic Media app, 95.7 St. Croix Country, WSCM Baldwin, your home for country favorites and classics. This is 95.7 St. Croix Country.
I was raised off of Route 3, out past where the blacktop ends. We'd walk to church on Sunday morning, race barefoot back to Johnson's Fence. That's where I first saw Mary, on that roadside picking blackberries. That summer I turned a corner in my soul down that red dirt road. It's where I drank my first beer. It's where I found Jesus. Where I first car, I tore it all to pieces. I learned the path to heaven is full of sinners and believers. Learned that happiness on earth ain't just for high achievers. I've learned, I've come to know there's life at home.